This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we're going to chat with an FGCU professor about new funding that was just approved by the National Science Foundation for research into Ciguatera fish poisoning and the environmental factors influencing its occurrence. Ciguatera fish poisoning is caused by eating seafood that carries ciguatoxins, which are created by dinoflagellates like Carinia brevis, which is the organism that causes red tide. And the South Florida Water Management District is testing what it calls emergency estuary protection wells, which they say could reduce the amount of excess water that's released to the coast. We'll find out more about that later. But first, last week, the City Council in Venice voted in favor of a year-round voluntary ban on lawn fertilizers, extending the current ban outlined by the city's ordinance that prohibits fertilizer use from June 1st through September 30th. That's basically the rainy season. This new ban was proposed by the city's vice mayor, Bob Daniels, who we'll meet in just a moment. It comes in response to the persistent red tide bloom that's been present off the coast of Southwest Florida for about a year now. Fertilizer ordinances have been in place in most municipalities and counties for more than a decade, with the goal of reducing the amount of nutrients that wind up in area waters, which can then fuel algal blooms like red tide. For the first half of today's show, we're going to explore what Lee County's ordinances say and what homeowners should keep in mind when they consider using fertilizer on their yards. We're joined in studio by Kurt Harkelrode. He's the operations manager with Lee County Natural Resources Division. Kurt, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
And Stephen Brown is a horticulture agent with IFAS Lee County Extension Office. Stephen, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you.
And on the line we have Bob Daniels. He's the vice mayor of the City of Venice. Vice Mayor Daniels, thanks for your time.
Hello, am I on now?
Yes, you are. Welcome to the radio show.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm glad to be asked today to talk about it.
Yeah, we have a number of questions for you, but we'd also like to invite our listeners to call in if they have questions, too. The number for them to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So, Mr. Daniels, what led you to propose this year-round fertilizer ban?
Could you repeat that?
What led you to propose this year-round fertilizer ban?
Well, I'll tell you, I've been out here 12 years from Ohio and very engaged in the city and tourism and transportation here. And this reminded me of death row, especially, you know, in my 12 years, we've always had a few days where it killed off some small fish. But now when you're getting dolphins and turtles and even our wildlife, our birds, are having trouble. Then we have people wearing respirators. Our lifeguards have to wear respirators in order to work on the beach. This has just devastated our city here. There's hardly any business at the restaurants. Hardly anybody's going to the beach because they can't breathe unless you wear a respirator. It's almost like we're the third world country.
Yeah, so do you think that a voluntary ban like the one that eventually got passed, do you think that'll help in some way?
Well, I just think that we invited Moat down, the CEO and the scientists, for a seminar. We had over 600 people show up, and really what started me was that meeting there when, after all these years and millions of dollars being poured into research, these three questions were quite devastating to me, and they are, do you know what causes it? And the answer was no. Do you know how to get rid of it? No. Can you predict when it's going to come? No. That, to me, is bad news for us. So we have 3 miles of the Gulf of Mexico. We have 16 outfalls and still 30 septic systems on the island that are in private places that we would probably have to pay to install public systems there. And so what I've got our leadership team, our city council agreed to do is to let our engineering department bring in an environmental team, and we want to put electronic Wi-Fi monitors on all the outfalls. So whether it rains today, tomorrow, or in the morning or what, we know how many gallons are going to outfall number one and what is actually going into there. So that's what we're up to.
So it sounds like you're trying to hit it on kind of a.
We have to have the data.
It sounds like you're trying to hit like a multi-pronged thing, so that you can like do also. You have the fertilizer ban, and then you're also monitoring what kind of water you're putting out into it. So do you feel like you're trying to kind of be a bit of a trailblazer, so that maybe other people around along the Gulf might follow your lead in reducing their output into the ocean of fertilizers? Well, you know what? Why don't we catch up with you a little bit later? And I'm going to turn now to the folks that I have in the studio. That was the vice mayor of the city of Venice, Bob Daniels, apparently having a mouthy dog in the background and making it a little difficult to have a conversation. Not unlike my dog. But I'm going to turn now to our guests in the studio and reintroduce them. First, we have Kurt Harkelrode. He's the operations manager with the Lee County Natural Resources Division. And Stephen Brown, he's the horticulture agent with UF-IFAS in Lee County's extension. So, Kurt, can you outline for me what Lee County's fertilizer ordinance says right now?
So back in 2008, our county commission passed a fertilizer ordinance. It was one of the first in the state, and it was restrictive in that there was no allowed use of nitrogen or phosphorus in the wet season from June 1st through September 30th.
So it's not allowed.
That's
during
correct.
Wet season.
Not allowed. It also addressed the professional landscapers also and requires them to go through training. And Stephen deals with them. They go through training. They have to be licensed to then work in Lee County. And through that training, they learn about different aspects, including the proper use of fertilizer.
And this was in 2008?
2008 it was passed. It became effective in 2009.
Was that in response to anything? I feel like we had like a red tide bloom that happened back then too.
Well, we've had red tide for,
for a
long,
long time.
So it wasn't in direct response to that. But I think we have been more the county certainly looked at doing things that we need to do in our own backyard. We have regulations from the federal government as well as the state that limits the amount of nutrients that are allowed to go into our waterways. And so one way to address those is through building large projects that cost millions and millions of dollars, which we have done. The less expensive means is source control.
Yeah.
If you try to limit those nutrients before they get into your waterways that cause you problems, that's certainly a better way to go.
I'm kind of curious about jurisdiction. So there are federal limits as to what can be put out into the waterways?
There are federal limits, and those are delegated to the state.
And then
the state regulates the counties and different permit holders throughout the state of Florida.
So okay, and then it goes down to the county level. And then within the county, can cities do things that are more strict or less strict?
Absolutely. And most of the municipalities in Lee County do have their own fertilizer ordinances. They're very similar to ours, but depending upon rainy season, Sanibel has a little different window. The wet season window is a little different. So one of the things we've done is create a campaign where we have the ability to go to a website, and then from there you can go to your local community, your municipality, to see what the restrictions are for you in particular.
All right. So okay. So there's a Lee County website that can then direct you to your own city's ordinances regarding fertilizers?
Correct. Fertilizesmart.com.
Fertilizesmart.com. That's not hard to remember. And plus, we have a link to that at WGCUnews.org. So how are these things enforced? Do you have to have a neighbor you don't get along with to get turned in, or do people go around and check? How do you do that?
Well, enforcement for us is somewhat secondary. Now, as far as a professional landscaper, they are required to have on their vehicle a sticker that shows they've gone through the proper training. So that our inspectors, if they're out and about, they can, you know, ask for that. Those are more easily determined if they are doing the right thing or not. As far as you and I doing our own landscaping, it's probably not going to be something that we regulate a lot. We do have some complaints, and we'll follow up on those. But our emphasis has been on education rather than enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's why we have the advertise or the promotional campaigns, the public education, you know, so people will understand, they'll hear the message. We've gone through a process to try to get behavioral modification, you know, talking to people about what phosphorus and nitrogen are, why they're a problem, and then getting into the specifics of what you need to do to meet the requirements of the ordinance.
I'm just curious, and I don't know if there's any data on this, but I'm wondering what number of lawns do you think in Lee County people are doing their own thing with, or are they using a landscaping service? I feel like there might be a lot of people using landscaping services down here because people are kind of unfamiliar with Florida lawn maintenance.
I'm sure there are. I just don't have the numbers on that.
I think it'd be kind of interesting. Steve Brown, I'm going to turn to you now. You've been a horticulturist for a long time. Have you seen the public perception of lush green grass evolve over time? Does everybody still want that Midwestern green grass look?
Well, everyone wants green grass. I don't know if the public perception has been negatively impacted by it. I as far as the fertilizer is concerned. But yeah, everyone still wants nice green grass.
Is there any way to get that without fertilizer down here?
Well, there is. There are times in which that can be accomplished. But within the band of – within that restricted area, that June through September 30th, what we really admonish especially the landscapers to do, they can apply the nitrogen and phosphorus before that period if they use a better developed fertilizer, which we call control or slow release. So essentially, if the right fertilizer is applied, let's say in May before June, they can have slow release that will still supply nitrogen and phosphorus to the lawn or even the landscape bed during those 4 months period. So we're not totally starved of those two plant nutrients.
So are those more expensive, the extended release ones?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they are more expensive. But I think, I mean, how do you measure expense? Because the landscapers also will see that benefit and the customer will see that benefit extended through that period if need be. So, yes, they're more expensive, but they're better for the environment.
And I'm wondering, do these run off as much as other regular, less expensive applications of fertilizer?
No, they don't run off as much simply because the nitrogen that would be the cheapest brand, so to speak, would be soluble. And soluble means they're dissolved more readily in water. And therefore, if we have a heavy rain event or even without the heavy rain event, that solubility allows it to run off on top of the surface of the soil or leach through the soil to get into the aquifers. So, yeah, the benefit, definitely the cost outweighs any other negative, so to speak.
So what is fertilizer? I mean, I was always kind of taught, you know, as in the Midwest, you know, manure is the best way. Is manure bad?
Well, manure is a type of fertilizer. It's not bad. Manure actually is pretty good because manure naturally has slow-release nitrogen and phosphorus. So naturally, manure is good. So that's fertilizer. But technically, fertilizer is basically anything that you package and you sell with respect to helping the plants to grow better. So it could be manure and it could be, as most commonly, synthetic process nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and a whole bunch more.
Do non-synthetic options work on Florida lawns? I mean, I'm pretty sure there aren't many, you know, gated communities that are going, hey, just throw the manure out there and let it fly. I mean, it's not really, you know.
Well, non-synthetic could work, but primarily if you have a good soil to begin with. So that could be. But in most cases, many of our soil are what we call fill material, which are high pH. So quite often there is the need for nitrogen supplements.
Mm-hmm. Did you have something you wanted to add?
Well, just as we're talking about manure, you know, one of the elements that we see as a problem here in Southwest Florida is pet waste.
Yeah, I was going to get to dog poop.
Right, right. So do your duty, pick up your duty.
Is that bad? You just said that. You do your duty. Is that a slogan? Is there a bumper sticker that says that?
Well, that's where we've expanded our campaign. It's another element that we need to address.
How much do you think that dog waste is having an impact on this kind of runoff?
It has a substantial impact I don't have the numbers here with me today, but we could provide those to you or your audience.
Well, we didn't tell you beforehand that would be part of the subject matter. But it does come up. I mean, but that is not the kind of fertilizer we're looking for.
Nah, we don't call that fertilizer at all.
No?
No.
Yeah, that is ways. We do have a call coming in from Phil in Cape Coral. Phil has a question. What would you like to ask?
Yes, I have a question. I know that they're very concerned about the commercial grade of nitrates and phosphates that people buy at Lowe's and Home Depot's. And yes, it does have a tremendous effect. And now I'm also listening about the dog waste that people might not pick up. There is a bigger concern to me. I've been here for only a short time, 8 years, but I've been doing so much research because I noticed from where I came from, originally from Western New York, that there was something wrong with this water. And I've seen it firsthand. I've talked to the head of the health biology department. She agrees with me. It is the use of human waste, sewer sludge, by agriculture, mainly your sugar, in basically a marshland, and then putting it back into this lake, which they're allowed to remove hundreds and thousands of gallons because of the situation. Until you do something about that, nothing that these people do locally, because of the geological effect of these soils, will ever have the lasting effect as the sugar has done.
Okay, and Phil brings up a point about agricultural fertilizers, and I'm wondering what kind of fertilizers do we see being used agriculturally here in Lee County? Do we have a lot of that?
Not a lot in Lee County, but any agricultural use is regulated by Florida Department of Agricultural and Consumer Services, so they are under regulations to the point of outside of our watershed, as your listener was mentioning. So there are agricultural uses. Predominantly, he's talking sugarcane. I don't think they're using any human waste, but they're
I've never heard of using human stuff on.
Not in this country much, but
no.
So their fertilizers, they have they're required to remove the phosphorus from their lands. You know, that does not go back into the lake. You know, what we're seeing, and Stephen and I were talking about that before the show, we have so much built-up nutrients.
Yeah, they call them legacy nutrients.
Legacy, right. So while the sugar industry and other agriculture south of the lake is not going back into the lake, we have so much that's already there, so much that's coming from north of the lake that we have to address all those problems. As well as everything we do locally in our own watershed.
It kind of seems like there are a lot of different contributors to this, and this we're just kind of talking about one part of the equation.
And let me add something with respect to farmers. You have to remember that farmers, commercial farmers, farm for profit. So to make profit, they have to be really careful about their inputs. And one big input is a fertilizer. So farming is a science down to how much fertilizer, what type of fertilizer. So farmers in general apply the best fertilizer for the maximum yield, and those fertilizers are quite often these slow-release components because they want to make sure the crop is fed for the long run without polluting the water. So I will say that farmers in many regards have been on top of this issue for years as far as and it is actually through the working with farmers that quite often there is a spillover with respect to the technology of landscape fertilizer.
Yeah, there's bigger dollars, I think, to be had in a shorter period of time in agriculture rather than residential fertilizing, from what I understand. So we started the hour talking about a voluntary year-round ban. The bans that we have kind of seem sort of voluntary because there's nobody patrolling the streets making sure, you know, that anything – I see you nodding – it seems kind of like it's an honor system sort of an approach. But do you see something like that working, or do you think something like what we're seeing now in the Gulf and in our waterways may make a dent in people's insistence?
Yeah, I think all those things come into play. You know, our blackout period is certainly become well known. I mean, that's why we're talking now about extending that, or one individual is here. I don't know if scientifically that's a good idea to eliminate all fertilizer. because if you eliminate those nutrients, those essential nutrients to the plant, then you can have some problems with erosion, and then you have excess runoff and siltation. So we want to practice best management, the best science that we can. So that's why, as Stephen was saying, use of slow-release, you know, fertilizers is the way to go. And there are other amendments that can be used during the wet season. So your landscape maintenance professionals have work to do while they're not applying the nitrogen and the phosphorus.
And let me say, when we teach these classes, what we're actually interested in is change of behavior. And we survey the landscapers. And believe me, they take it seriously, not after the class, but months afterwards, to find out if they have changed their behavior with regards to how close they even fertilize to a water body and the fertilizer they use and when they apply the fertilizer. And in all cases, there have been significant change through with information from the survey with regards towards their change of habit. And that's what we're looking for, little by little.
Mm-hmm. And we have a question from Calusa Waterkeeper that came through on Twitter saying, why not promote the use of buffers as well? What kind of buffers might they be talking about? Do either of you guys know?
Yeah, well, there is in our ordinance, there is a buffer of 10 feet setback from any kind of waterway.
Oh, a buffer, like you can't spray within 10 feet of a waterway.
Correct.
That would be a lot of waterways like in Cape Coral, for example.
Absolutely. And if you go through Cape Coral, any area that does have numerous canals, you see that generally, the lawn goes right up to that seawall.
Yeah.
So if you have a buffer, setbacks even from lakes, you know, or ponds within your community, you know, so the buffer that we have is in our ordinance is you can't fertilize within that 10 feet. There are other things you can do with planting, so you know, not putting turf grass maybe right up to that water body.
Stephen, I've heard from people on my show before, and I'm wondering if you would agree with this, that along seawalls having things like mangroves to help do that absorption of water right up next to the seawall. I mean, they're not the crystal clear view and straight shot that you want to see like line of sight, but is that a good option?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Mangroves will help along with a lot of littoral plants or water-loving plants. And as we have a lot of mangroves that occur naturally. If there is mangroves present or you do decide to plant it, there is prohibition on as far as trimming.
Taking it out.
Excessively, yes. Or taking it out, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we did a show recently about Florida-friendly landscaping, which has a primary goal of reducing the need for water and fertilizer both. Do you see more people coming in looking for this kind of yard?
Oh, absolutely. We've been promoting that Florida-friendly landscaping for many years. And there are 9 principles that are taught. They're primarily taught by master gardeners, and it is for the general public. And we hold classes primarily in the June season, in the winter and spring. And yes, there is a big need for Florida-friendly landscaping as far as the general public is concerned.
And I know we don't have a whole ton of time left, but I wanted to ask you, Stephen, what's your best advice for homeowners who still want to have that lush, green, weed-free grass yard, but they want to be as environmentally conscious as possible? Or is it possible to have it both ways?
Well, I don't know if it's possible to have it both ways, because even in the best managed lawn, and I've been to a lot of lawns, there are always weeds creeping in, because that's the business of weeds. They want their place in the world, and that place can be in your lawn. So you'll never have a completely weed-free lawn, especially the homeowner. So what we say is you have to tolerate some weed invasion and manage your lawn accordingly. You can't solve the problem with fertilizer or herbicide or pesticide, and that's not even the goal. Much of the goal is to be tolerant of some defects. And in the end, they're not really defects.
Yeah, my lawn's pretty much half weed. I just mow them.
Yeah.
You know, forget about it. Kurt, I want to ask, you've been working in natural resources for a while here. Do you feel like we're heading in the right direction in Lee County?
I think so. I think we've been on the forefront of water conservation efforts within the county. And as I said, we were one of the first local communities to do a landscape ordinance that included a ban on phosphorus and nitrogen during the wet season. A lot of other local communities have picked that up. So I think after education efforts, public education, I think that effort is helping us in the long run reduce the nutrients that we put into our own waterways.
Can you give me that website one more time so people can check out what their local ordinance is?
Fertilizesmart.com.
FertilizeSmart.com. You can go there and you can figure out what your local address, what the ordinances are. Now, do you want people to start calling and turning in their neighbors?
Probably not.
That'd be a lot of phone calls. I've had a beef with that guy in his yard. So great. No, I mean, but really, your whole thing is just really educating, getting people to just do the right thing on their own.
Correct.
Yeah, right. And I've seen that in practice with what I do, because quite often some of the landscapers come to me saying that they had a warning to take my class, and nobody beefs about it. They actually sit down, and at the end, they say they learn a lot more about horticulture and landscaping than they did before the class, and they now become part of the extension family because there is more to learn beyond all of that with regards to taking care of plants and being good steward of the landscape.
Well, there may be people who go into the landscaping business and may not have learned about the extended release fertilizer and may end up having a more successful business because they're making smarter economic decisions too that help the environment as well.
Absolutely. And some of them are even maybe aren't that familiar with the concept of NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. So now it's like a brand new world to them, and there is a better professional industry that's out there because of the GIBMP classes.
All right. Well, that's great. But that's all the time that we have for this part of the show. But I want to thank my guest, Stephen Brown, the horticulture agent with UF IFAS Lee County Extension. Thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome.
And Kurt Harkelrode is the operations manager with Lee County Natural Resources Division. Thanks so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
When we return, the National Science Foundation has awarded Florida Gulf Coast University a five-year multi-million dollar grant to study what's called Ciguatera fish poisoning as part of a $30 million grant for new research on links among oceans, lakes, and human health. We're joined by FGCU Professor of Marine Science, Dr. Mike Parsons, to learn more about what the funding means to his research efforts. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.